Well, you know what that theme song means, don't you, ladies and gentlemen? It means we're going to go out and pay a visit to our old friend on the other coast of the United States from New York. He's actually from New Jersey, I believe. But anyway, here's Michael Snyder. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Alex, and greetings to all on GabNet, and actually born in Philadelphia, but yeah, we had a summer home in New Jersey when I was a kid.
Okay. All right. Well, I was close.
Well met. Close enough, you know, the Jersey Turnpike, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we are here in Los Angeles, and we see a lot of movies, and we like to tell you what we think is good and what we think is crap. That's my mandate, and so let's roll with some new films, and we'll kick it off with Lee Cronin's The Mummy. So, like, The Mummy, Frankenstein's monster, Dracula, Robin Hood, Sherlock Holmes, they're all fair game for exploitation in multiple media because all the characters are in the public domain, so we get all these films and TV shows with variations of them. And now we have Lee Cronin's The Mummy, which concerns the young kidnapped daughter
Let me ask you, though. Does The Mummy come under that? Because The Mummy, I think, was just a creation of Universal.
Right. Well, the time has elapsed since all that, and since The Mummy has also been in legend, and I mean, kind of like Robin Hood, in legend and in various interpretations, I think it's fair game, actually. For instance, this Lee Cronin's The Mummy is a Warner Brothers movie, not a Universal film. But in any event, this one is all about the young kidnapped daughter of an American TV journalist in Cairo getting caught up in some ancient Egyptian hoodoo. The heartbroken journalist, his wife and son return to the U.S. without the missing girl. And then 8 years later, authorities in Egypt say they found the girl alive, sort of. And the now teenage daughter joins the family, who have a second daughter of elementary school age now. And they all live in a New Mexico home. But this kid who disappeared and has now come back has become a cross between the possessed Regan in The Exorcist and, I don't know, Gollum from Lord of the Rings. Anyway, Dad is played by Jack Rayner of Midsummer and Sing Street, and Mom is played by Laya Costa, and they are understandably freaked out by what happened to their little girl, and things spiral into even more nightmarish awfulness from there. So the influence of movie horror meister Sam Raimi on director-screenwriter Lee Cronin is very evident here, and actually Cronin wrote and directed Evil Dead Rise, a balls-to-the-wall continuation of Raimi's Evil Dead franchise, so that's kind of a positive for The Mummy. I mean, he knows the milieu. And the Egyptian setting of the first act of this and the callbacks later on are pretty intriguing. Ultimately, it's a competent, creepy, and kind of squishy horror movie that is somewhat adjacent to the classic Mummy from Universal Pictures. But it's not as fun and as swaggering as the reboot of The Mummy with Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz. You got to deduct points for the obvious swipes and the derivative elements. I mean, I was literally waiting for the mummy girl to start whining about her precious or, I don't know, turn her head 360 degrees after vomiting. And there's a lot of vomit here. Anyway, despite or because of being part of Raimi's Evil Dead universe, Cronin's Evil Dead Rise was a better and more inventive film than this one. But I was pretty glued to the screen for Cronin's Mummy, although that may have been all the viscera splashing around. For horror movie buffs, this is worth a look if you keep your expectations low. It's in theaters. That's kind of a pretty lukewarm review, if you ask me, you know. All right, let's get on to something I really liked. I have a wholehearted endorsement of Normal. This is a wild, funny shoot-em-up that solidifies Bob Odenkirk, who's done some dramatic work in Nebraska, Breaking Bad, the Breaking Bad spinoff Better Call Saul. But now he's an action movie star. His turn as a retired assassin forced back into the game in Nobody and Nobody 2 already sealed the deal. I don't know. I want to note that Odenkirk's career kicked off as a sketch comedian alongside David Cross on HBO's Mr. Show. And with his comedy background and beleaguered, ordinary dweeb look, he always brings this dryly amusing air to his roles, even the dramatic ones to some extent. Here he plays Ulysses, an interim sheriff in the quiet, seemingly upstanding Midwestern town of Normal. Thus the title. With his marriage on the rocks and an unfortunate situation at his previous job haunting him still, Ulysses is happy for the peace and quiet that Normal provides, but a bank robbery throws all that out the window when the town is revealed to not be what it seems, and Normal's unexpected visitors wreak havoc on the place. As outlandish as it gets, with like cartoon level violence, death, and destruction in full effect, Normal is well written by Odenkirk himself and Derek Kolstad, and very well directed by Great Britain's Ben Wheatley, who has made some really trippy, darkly entertaining films that I am very fond of, including Free Fire, Kill List, and Sightseers. And the supporting cast is like really cool, with familiar face Lena Headey as a punky local merchant, and oh my god, it's Henry Winkler as the glad-handing mayor. There's kind of a nice subtext about the false front some middle Americans put up to hide their true selves. Meanwhile, Odenkirk's flawed but decent sheriff, caught in the middle of this mess, is someone who deserves your rooting interest. Bangs, booms, and body count notwithstanding, Normal is a blast. It is in theaters this weekend. Okay, this is a little rougher. Mother Mary is next on the list. In screenwriter-director David Lowery's mix of interpersonal drama, dreamscapes, paranormal weirdness, and arena pop music, Mother Mary, Anne Hathaway is electric as the megastar Mother Mary, kind of a Lady Gaga Madonna mashup with the wardrobe of Dua Lipa. And in any case, you never saw this coming. I've been following her career for a long time, and I remember the 2012 movie adaptation of Les Miserables. I mean, Hathaway can sing, but I hardly expected her to kind of command the stage like she does in this movie. Her Mother Mary character is kind of at a crossroads in her career, having experienced some serious mental and physical trauma and dropped out for a while. So she seeks out her long estranged bestie, Sam, played by Michaela Cole. So Sam is a successful clothing designer who used to do Mary's stage costumes, but they had a falling out. Mary uses the pretext of needing a special gown for her comeback concert to see Sam again, but the reunion is much more wrenching than a simple fitting for a new dress. Old wounds resurface, I mean literally. Ghostly apparitions torment the two women. The movie, which kind of, it seems to be concerned with long simmering resentment and the search for forgiveness, but it suffers from a certain sketchiness to the backstory of the relationship between the women. But the art direction, cinematography, and music are lovely, and the performances by Hathaway and Cole are so compelling, they almost elevate the whole thing. And Hathaway's extravagantly staged and shot musical numbers, which, by the way, are written by singer-songwriters Charlie XCX and FKA Twigs, and produced by Jack Antonoff of Taylor Swift fame, among other things, those songs, truly slay. Members of Mary's girl gang are played by, among others, Hunter Schaefer, Kaya Gerber, Jessica Brown Findlay, and FKA Twigs. And in fact, I do not believe a man has a single line of dialogue in the entire film. Lowry previously wrote and directed The Green Knight, The Old Man and the Gun, and A Ghost Story, all of which were good. So I want to kind of give him some leeway here. Mother Mary just isn't as satisfying as those movies. It's kind of an interesting experiment that falters as a coherent narrative. It is in select theaters, including New York and Los Angeles this weekend. I assume it's going to open a little wider. Let's jump back a week to movies that we didn't cover because we do this biweekly. We'll kick off with Beast. Another movie titled Beast, only a few years after the Idris Elba Man vs. Wildlife action film of the same name. This Beast is a decent, if generic, sports redemption movie about an Aussie mixed martial arts fighter named Patton James, played by Daniel McPherson. And this guy loses his championship status, retires, and then finds himself back in the game years later when the current champ, old rival Xavier Grau, played by Brem Foster, targets the ex-champ's reckless younger brother, who is also an MMA fighter. It runs in the family. After one of a series of inciting incidents, an unscrupulous MMA promoter lures James into unretiring for a winner-take-all match versus Grau. I mean, the showdown is inevitable, as is James reuniting with his old trainer, Sammy, for the pivotal clash. You know, we've been here before, but cliches and echoes aside, this is done in competent fashion, well, with some punch, so to speak, thanks to the cast and solid direction from Tyler Atkins. And then there's supporting player and co-screenwriter Russell Crowe, whose latter-day career has kind of benefited from the depth of his work in these gruff character roles. I mean, if you haven't seen him in as Hermann Göring in Nuremberg, try to catch that film. Anyway, he plays Sammy the trainer, and keeping the Aussie star power going, they brought in Luke Hemsworth, Chris Hemsworth's brother, to play the slimy producer. Beast is good of kind, let's put it that way, and it is in theaters wide. Let's see here. Okay, a little art house stuff before we leave the realm here of movie reviews. The latest from the ever-reliable filmmaker Steven Soderbergh, whose sly, literate espionage movie Black Bag was one of my favorites of 2025, is The Christophers, which is essentially a two-person face-off that has fun with the fickle nature of the art world while addressing questions of legacy, fame, and what, if anything, an artist ultimately owes admirers and the public. At the center of The Christophers is Julian Sklar, a retired, sort of retired, but definitely dying painter and former darling of the critics. He's played by Ian McKellen. And the artist's disenfranchised son and daughter would like to get their hands on dad's lost and supposedly unfinished portrait series known as The Christophers as their inheritance. So the siblings hire a young woman with enough skill to forge the Christophers if she can spirit the canvases out of dad's atelier. It's an absolute treat to watch McKellen, still at the top of his game at the age of 86, work his magic opposite. Oh my God, it's Michaela Cole, the talented young actress who's also in Mother Mary. Her career is just getting started. James Corden, yeah, that James Corden, and Jessica Gunning from Baby Reindeer played the conniving brother and sister. This is written by Ed Solomon, who did Now You See Me and Men in Black, and collaborated with Soderbergh on the crime drama No Sudden Move a couple years ago. This is taut, funny, and sharp, and if you're up for a battle of wits between a canny old master and a bold, youthful upstart, The Christophers is your movie. It's in select theaters. And let's wrap things up with the new Hamlet. Riz Ahmed is on fire as everybody's favorite tormented Shakespearean prince in the clever, lean, and effective update of Hamlet that relocates the story from centuries-old Denmark to modern-day London and the well-to-do South Asian community. In this Hamlet, Elsinore isn't the town ruled by the Danish king who is Hamlet's father. It's the name of the sprawling development and construction company owned and operated by Hamlet's dad. So the setting is different. The situation looks different. But the dialogue, which is kind of edited down here and there, is straight from the bard. So you do get some of your favorite soliloquies, one of which is actually performed behind the wheel of a speeding car, no lie, and it works. As for the classic story beats, Hamlet comes home for his father's funeral to learn his uncle Claudius is about to marry his newly widowed mom and take over the family business. The father's ghost appears to Hamlet and reveals a fiendish truth about the patriarch's untimely death, sending Hamlet into revenge mode and kind of driving him a little nuts. The various changes made are well thought out. I thought this was pretty dazzling, especially Ahmed. Riz kicks some ass here, got some charisma, great acting chops, and a really good supporting cast, including Morfydd Clark as Hamlet's star-crossed love interest, poor distressed Ophelia, Joe Alwyn as his betrayed friend Laertes, and Timothy Spall as Laertes' father, Polonius, very well adapted by Michael Leslie and directed by Anil Kharia. I was surprised at how good this is and how well it worked. I recommend the new Hamlet in select theaters. And I think that's about it. We could talk about the weak-ass romantic comedy, Yumi in Tuscany, but let's not. It was very disposable, if you know what I mean. What are you watching yourself, Mr. Bennett?
Nothing much, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, we watched the final episode of this year's The Pitt, which I think is the best show on television, I think. You know, just my opinion. It is, and it's the best medical drama ever done. I mean, it's incredible. And it ended in a way that leaves it on hanging off a cliff, you know. So we expected that. And it had a very kind of nice ending. It was it's hard to explain unless you've seen the series. But it's a great show. If you aren't watching it, you must watch it, you know.
I'll try to seek it out. I started, it's only been two episodes in so far, The Audacity, which is a kind of dark, somewhat funny, but messed up hour long about the tech bros of Silicon Valley. And man, these people are monsters, as we know from real life, but this is really well done in terms of depicting them. Billy Magnuson plays one of those, you know, self-proclaimed masters of the universe. And he's really detestable, I have to tell you. And it's a great supporting
cast.
Well,
it's nice that you have all this time for this other stuff, but you're, by not watching The Pitt, you're watching something extraordinary.
All right. Well, I'll get to that. You can't see everything. One more.
Well, you have. You should see the stuff that counts.
Well, this counts too. I mean, I also want to recommend Joe Nesbo's Detective Hola, which looks like Detective Hole on Netflix, which is an adaptation of novels about a self-destructive, brilliant Oslo police detective. Mm-hmm. And it stars this guy, Tobias Santelman, as Harry Hola. Mm-hmm. And his opponent in this specific miniseries is a fellow cop and nemesis named Tom, played by the Swedish-American actor Joel Kinnaman from RoboCop and The Killing. This is pretty damn good, I thought. And if you like detective stuff, I recommend you check this out.
Well, that's the second show this year that Joel Kinnaman is on. He's also on For All Mankind.
Oh yeah, you're right. He's a busy working guy.
And he's back there. He's back there with his old co-star from The Killing.
What's her name? The Canadian actress, I think.
Marielle
Enos.
Enos, right. Okay.
Anyway, all right. So that's about it at my end. If you want to check out my reviews and my conversations with Alex Bennett, you can go to Twitter, a.k.a. X, at Culture Blaster, or to Michael Snyder's Culture Blast page on Facebook, and certainly back here on Gabnet in a couple weeks.
And we'll have some more Gabnet coming up right now. So stay right where you are.